I'll be the first monkey. Rod Severn from Sun Microsystems. Bill, thanks very much for that. It was most interesting. But the question I have is, you have the Federation, I think, in this country is one of the big problems that we face here. You've got the Liberals who are just starting to learn how to spell environmental problems. You've got the Labor state governments who want to hang on to everything possible. And your statement here is that the government's got to get rid of all of their holdings here in order to create competition. How do you propose you're going to get them to let go?
First of all, I wasn't actually suggesting, or Eric wasn't suggesting, to use your words, let go of all of their assets. I mean, we understood, as I said in my presentation, that this is a very sensitive political question for a number of state governments. And so we tried to find a way of acknowledging that reality, because it is a reality. And if we don't acknowledge that reality, then we won't do the right thing in terms of trying to get the right and best public policy outcome. So that would be the first thing I need to say. We weren't necessarily saying that you had to get rid of or sell your energy assets to have an efficient energy sector. But what we did point out was if you want to maintain ownership of your energy assets, there are things that you can do. For example, and this has got nothing to do with the Federation, I'll come back to that point in a minute, you can do it inside your own jurisdiction. You can disaggregate those assets. You can put them on a footing as though they were private entities. You can create a governance arrangement which for all intent and purposes, encourages them to operate as though they were private companies. So you can go and do that. You can also, if you want to encourage the private sector, as WA has, for all intent and purposes, done, they have quarantined, effectively, any further investment in the public sector, and they have said any further investment in energy will be in the private sector. And they have, in fact, made sure that that is well understood and that is a strong commitment by that particular government. We've also made it clear that if governments believe that there is a more compelling case, to use your words again, let's go of some of their assets, one place to start might be to let go of some of the retail assets. Because here, amongst all of the assets that are associated with energy, if we can get owners of those part of the retail assets close to customers, we are most likely then, in that particular sector of the market, get a relatively efficient outcome. If we then combine that with just a little bit of tweaking, which then says, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with you, the retailer, owning some energy assets, then we'll begin to get some change. Now, that seems to me to be absolutely consistent with the possibility that some jurisdictions, some governments, state or otherwise, will say, we want to hang on to our assets, while at the same time encouraging a form of dynamic efficiency in the market. Now, with regard to your question about the Federation, there is clearly a question here. And that's why I made the points about governance arrangements. Because let me try and bring this down to a practical level. In terms of governing energy across the country, we have a series of ministers who meet regularly, and they generally do a good job. But the fact is, those ministers, many of them, own energy assets. They are making regulatory decisions at the same time as many of those ministers are also the ministers responsible for the efficient operation of those government energy assets. There is clearly a conflict of interest, and there is clearly something that needs to be addressed. And there is clearly an issue here for the Federation and clearly an issue here for COAG.
Any further questions? Yes.
I'm Tony Markson from the NOUS Group. I'm interested in asking Bill about his view of the prospects in the long term for baseload generation investment based on interregional trade. The issue seems to be with only 1,000 megawatts of additional capacity required each year and baseload power stations pretty well coming at a minimum of 1,000 megawatts of capacity per station, you have to consider the possibility of interregional trade as a scale factor in getting a large enough market to make such investments viable. But at the moment, with the interregional linkage of the transmission network, you have the possibility of interregional congestion on the links, and hence the frustration that leads to people postulating an unconstrained network. The current arrangements with the auction of interregional trading residues seems to only have generated a very short-term market in these residues, settlement residues, that could be used to hedge the risk of interregional trading. I'm interested in your comments because you would have looked at this issue in depth as to what you see the long-term future prospects in this area being.
Thanks, Tony. As I'm sure will always be the case in this audience, it is a well-informed question. I think implicit in so much of the work of Eric was that we have to think differently about the way in which we think about borders in the energy market. And that's why for us, the whole question of how we think about transmission planning, how we think about that in the context of locational decisions by generators, is critical to the future. Because in a way, and it's why I made the point earlier in my presentation, and it's understandable, by the way, so many of the decisions in the past have been made primarily within a regional framework, within the framework of what goes on inside those jurisdictions, whether it be states or the territories. But in the future, we will have to consider the possibility that there will be significant cross flows between regions. And that was implicit not only in the comments we made about the regulatory test, the comments we made about the role of the information flows through the national planner. All those were implicit in those concepts. If I could just avert slightly and say we didn't go to the point of then saying, and therefore what will be the effect on the financial markets? Because we were trying to argue that if we get the structural issues right, the financial markets will to some extent sort themselves out, particularly if we have the right instruments, or at the very least give the opportunity for the right instruments to be developed and be created over time. But you're absolutely right. And now I think it's all, to give you a bit of colour and light around this, one of the very important, I think, difficulties that Eric had to grapple with was whether we go one step further from a national planner around the grid to, in fact, having a national owner of the grid. And there are a number of people within governments right across Australia who are arguing that if we wanted to address your problem fundamentally, maybe we ought to think about a national owner of the grid and bite that bullet now. I think Eric's approach to this was that we couldn't find that the problem was either now or in the future likely to be sufficient to go to that next step. But at the same time, one of the decisions by COAG implies that that's a possibility. Because what COAG said is we should review these issues in 5 years' time, and what's implicit in that, because I know this has been discussed, is let's make sure that their planning approach works, because if it doesn't, we may have to think about going the next step and taking a slightly different approach to the way in which we think about ownership across the national grid.
Bob Cooper, Institutional Developments. Well, thank you very much for that very comprehensive report on the work that you've been doing. The primary question that's exercising my mind is, where do we get the authority, the force, or the power to ensure that the power generation capacity increase that we need is actually delivered?
Thanks very much. The approach that we try to take, and I'm not, by the way, I'm not going to try and convince you that this is the whole answer, but we felt that answer will resolve itself with the right market structure. Resolve itself with the right market structure, with the right information flows, with the right level of governance, including at a ministerial level and at a COAG level. And we came to that conclusion because there seemed to be no lack of preparedness to invest. What there was a lack of preparedness to invest now in some jurisdictions because of the uncertainty and the risks of investment.
Good. Any further questions? Whilst we're considering those, I've got a question for Bill. I guess quite a few of us in the room are obviously from New South Wales and have interest in the New South Wales energy market. Maybe, Bill, if you can give us some insight into how well you think the performance of the market's going at the moment and its acceptance towards change.
Well, that's a big question, isn't it? Having looked down the list of people who are here, I know that there'll be a number of tables very interested in my comments on that. Let me frame this slightly differently.
Please.
I'll try. In an Australian-wide global sense, New South Wales is absolutely critical. I mean, if I can frame it in a slightly different way, we all are watching this debate that's going on about how does one think about, the replacement of the resources sector when it declines. I mean, I know the answer to that. It's New South Wales. To have the most efficient New South Wales economy is absolutely critical to Australia. No ifs, no buts. When one thinks about this economy, this dynamic economy called New South Wales, what is it, around about 38% of Australia's GDP?
I'll take your word for it.
Something like that. When we think about it in another context, we think about the population of our country. What is it, about a third that lives within a 150-kilometre radius of where we're sitting here? So, I mean, New South Wales matters, not only to New South Wales, but it matters to Australia. And so anything that we can do to create the most efficient energy sector in the country located here in New South Wales is of enormous benefit to the citizens of New South Wales and enormous benefit to Australia. So therefore, clearly some of the comments that we made around how one might think about getting the right market structure in Australia applies to New South Wales. And we were very upfront about this in all of our debates and discussions. We respected completely, as one should, the desires and objectives of particular governments. But what we then turned around and said, if you want to maintain assets in public ownership, this is how you might be able to make your industry the most efficient in the country. And I think many of those lessons are ones that apply to New South Wales as well.
Mm, right, good. Thank you, Bill. Any other questions? Yes, in the centre here.
Phil Gall from Transgrid. In the previous question, there was a discussion about the uncertainty of investment. I think you said, Bill, in your answer, there's no lack of willingness to invest. There was, however, a degree of uncertainty about the environment. How much of that uncertainty do you think can be attributed to the energy-only market design?
Not very much. In fact, I think while the market design is of great interest to people like us and you and engineers, I think you could take particular market designs, and we've already have another experiment in WA, and we found to some extent some of the same issues applying in WA. So I think you can overstate the question about what a particular design characteristic might do or not do in terms of encouraging efficient investment. I think it's fair to say we didn't find that as being the major issue.
I've got another question for Bill. I know you didn't talk about greenhouse, and you obviously made the comment that it was something that wasn't quite addressed for various reasons, but from the point of view of greenhouse and climate change, obviously the way in which the reform process will continue is going to have a major impact on whether we can meet some of our greenhouse aspirations. Right. What do you see the real challenges being in this area?
Well, again, while we didn't cover it, a lot of our discussion and a lot of our recommendations imply to some extent that we will have to have a variety of energy sources. And so the whole idea of having an energy planner that's looking at whether we're at location decisions, whether they're about wind, whether they're about solar, whether they're about gas, whether they're about coal, whether they're about various quality coal and so on, a lot of our decisions were predicated on the acceptance that we have to take a very broad view about what might be possible not only now and into the future. And to do that, we have to be able to transport energy across boundaries, and to be able to do that, we have to have an efficient national grid. And we have to take into account, more than we do today, the complexity of locational decisions for various sources of energy.
So do we have challenges with some of the newer technologies, some of the newer renewable technologies being effectively coming to the market? Is there incentives for them at the moment?
Well, that's not an issue. I mean, I don't feel qualified necessarily to cover that. We didn't cover that in Errigan. Okay. I have personal views. I don't think they're particularly relevant.
Okay, fair enough.